You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Gonna hit that record button in 3, 2, 1. Here we go. We are live. We are on the air. It's us. It's Dave. It's Tim. It's Wheeze. It's Triple Radio for September 2024. Tim, how the heck you doing? I missed a month. Wait, you know. So wait, stop talking. Stop talking for a sec because you are not recording. Now we're recording. Now everyone's recording.
All right. Yay.
Yeah.
Well, that was such a great intro you had there, Dave. Oh, well.
No, it's still there. I didn't record over it. I just added you to the mix in my mixer, my DAW, my audio software. Yeah, anything's possible with audio.
For your DAT?
This is all on digital audio tape. This is all.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and mini disc. Very satisfying. As well, Sony mini disc.
Mm-hmm. Zip files, no one will remember. Felt very good.
Hey, everybody. It's Tim, Dave, and Weiss.
Hey, here we are. Hello.
Triple Radio time. Maybe for September, maybe for August. I think I don't know if we're going to make up that month we missed.
Right. Yeah. We did. You know, we're all the ways in betweens now. Yeah. What was the last official one? Did we call it July or did we call it August?
So the last one we called July.
Yeah.
Like we've been slightly behind. We missed June. We recorded right at the beginning of July. We're like, oh, this is the June episode. Then we did the same shit in August and we called it the July episode. And it is September 3rd.
We're such cheaters.
I don't know. Maybe we'll get caught up. We'll see what happens.
How many?
I'm not optimistic.
Are we going to wind up with fewer episodes than months then?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Well, that was the same thing happened last year. We had 11 episodes last year. We missed a month somewhere.
Well, are we going to prorate people? Because how much do we charge for these?
$0 American.
Okay, so, well, with the exchange rate, it's not bad.
$10,000.
We do owe them money.
we owe this audience money. If you or your loved ones have been injured by Triple Radio,
emotionally, maybe mentally,
you may be entitled to compensation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that intro was very hot. We had a lot of energy.
I know. I tell you. Should we keep that train going or should we just lean back, put our feet up and let the audience carry it from here? Because.
I mean, I'd love to hear from the audience, but that's not how this works.
We'll just stop for 2 hours and listen to the audience.
I mean, no. To be clear, I'm not proposing listening to the audience. They don't get to talk, but they need to maintain their own personal energy, is what I'm saying. They don't need us to, like, be these hype, active hosts and, like, you know, keep up their interest. Like, listen, if you want to listen to us, is it my responsibility that you are not excited to be here?
So you want a version of the Fly Girl that is our audience. You want the hype squad to just come in, give the vibes, give the energy, and then leave.
That'd be cool.
Sort of thing. That would be super cool.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to hiring a hype man because I tell you, at 8 p.m., I can't be my own hype man.
See, that's why you guys got to move down to CST. It's a beautiful 27 p.m. right now.
Yeah.
Feeling so fresh and chipper.
It honestly, that hour is like the hour of difference for me.
Yeah.
I am actually feeling fairly fresh and chipper because my wife and children went back to school today, officially. First return to school day for everybody, end of summer vacation. So I didn't sleep well last night. So I went back to bed before beginning my own work day. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So today is one of the most nightmarish days of the year for me.
Oh, buddy.
Because, well, this is how it fucking happens every year. And just like the, you know, the little fit that young sir had, like right when I was sitting down, like I got him like all set. I'm like, okay, bud, you just gotta sit there, read your book, and then, you know, hustle up to bed when mama tells you. And he just like decided to have a fit about water, and Lauren was at her wit's end, because this is what happens every year the day after Labor Day. The school in which I work at starts today. They start school today. The school in which my child goes to does not start school until tomorrow. And so we end up with this extremely stressful day where, you know, she's trying to work from home. Wife's trying to work from home at her desk that's over there on the that way. And he's just here. He kind of has to keep himself busy, which is never good. But also in the middle of the day, today is the day when like his supply drop off and meet the teacher thing is in the middle of the afternoon. And it is every year. It is a goddamn shit show. And everybody complains. Why are you doing an entire elementary school's worth of supply drop off and meet the teacher in an hour and a half window on a Tuesday afternoon and not anytime closer to the end of the workday? Before this week?
They don't stagger the grades, at least?
No, it's all at once.
That's not a good idea. That's not smart.
No, no. I don't know why I don't know why they do this. Don't know why they don't. I don't understand. There's reasons why. I'm sure it has to be at a certain point in the day because there's some kind of teacher contract union thing, I'm sure, which is why they didn't start today, because they get some other day off somewhere, I don't know where, or some other day when somebody else is off. But why can you not stagger the grades a little bit so the parking lot isn't full out to the road?
Just
madness. So it's like, you know, we got to coordinate lunch breaks so I can, you know, we can both get there and get him in there and do the thing. And then like, it's just not in, you know, for me, it's the first day of school. So it's very busy and stressful, and
you're like solving problems
so much going on, solving problems that are urgent and, you know, just a busy day any other time. But then it's like the added stress of like, you know, having to work from home with, you know, the kid on the last day of his summer break where he's just,
you know,
done. And then having to get to the school to do that. And it's horrible. Once he tomorrow, gravy, pretty much, because then he's back to school and we're all getting back into the routine again. Pretty much.
For regularity, the most part. He's having fun. He's with his friends again. But yeah, no, that sounds, our supply drop off was last week and they stagger the grades like sometimes on different days.
Like a sensible school should and would. Not this one. It's not like he has terribly small grade levels either. I don't know. They just, it's like we didn't get our bus information. I had to email about, it was just,
That's my strongest sympathies. That is a bad time.
At least you got to take a nap.
If it is any in solidarity, that day that, I was talking to you guys in a panic because I thought my sister-in-law was going to go into labor. That our supply drop-off day. And that was so that was a day I had to go work at the theater. So I had to be in one place. Jen had to be in another place. Someone had to take the kid to the supply drop-off. And suddenly my brother and sister-in-law needed to go to the hospital. So so that was a stressful day for but not, you know, it's not. This year was a rare year where all of our days aligned, and Jan didn't even have students today. She just got to be there and like watch an assembly where some retired teachers who play in a band played some songs, and then she got to set up her library and this was, today was a very lucky, fortunately lucky. It doesn't always go that day. That way for us if our schedules don't line up this way, but this year was fortunate. I've been in the hell that you've been in. It sucks.
It would be easier if they had done the thing last week, because then it's like, oh, I'll just ship him off to grandma grandpa's for the night, but he has to be here in the afternoon.
The fuck,
I don't know.
Yeah,
if this wasn't his last year in the elementary school, maybe next year I'd be like, you're not going in, we're screw it. Like, this is ridiculous.
You can bring your five different colored folders in on the first day. What the hell does it matter?
Bring all the same crap that I buy every single year and then he doesn't use. And
here's your communal classroom two tissue boxes and pencils.
It's ridiculous.
Guys, I don't even know what a classroom looks like anymore. At this point, I don't even know what a kid's...
They're 100% gay now.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good.
Well, they are woke. Kid might be tired when he walks into school, but the second he crosses the threshold, he is woke. He's wide awoke.
He's coming home a transgender.
Yeah. But, yeah, well, his classroom has... His classroom last year was in this state as well, where it's like they still have up interactive projectors. So they have projectors in rooms now, Weiss, instead of like they wheel out the light bulb transparency thing. But like they have big touchscreen TVs now. So on one side of the room, there's a giant touchscreen TV on a cart. And then on the other side is like the projector hanging over top of the whiteboard. But I think they're depreciating the interactive projectors and moving to the, but it's they have both are in the room right now still. And it was like this in third grade too. I don't know. I mean, I think their tech is run by BOCES, which is probably part of the problem. If in my estimate, that wouldn't fly in my district, but it's like, they don't have very big classrooms. So like this giant, like 60-inch TV on a cart takes up quite a bit of real estate.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's bigger than I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a 52, but still it's big.
Yeah.
Still big TV. But yeah, his room's not that big. Yeah. He's got like little desk and, you know, they're. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, hell.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not as interesting as
there we go.
Oh, media though.
Ooh, oh yeah.
Not as interesting as movies, video games, and television shows.
Hey. Oh folks. That's why they come to us. You can't beat our transitions. Yep.
Dave, did you watch any old movies?
I wish I could have gotten to the one that you said that you watched. Wasn't in the cards for me. This past month, I did check one off my list, though. I watched The Goonies for the very first time in my life.
Yeah.
Fun flick.
That was it. Yes, there was a fun and energetic flick that I was surprised. I expressed some surprise about the tone and tenor of that movie on social media and was lambasted, dragged across the coals. How dare I accuse this movie, this sacrosanct film, of having a script that was perhaps a bit loose and a bit improvised, and having what?
Well, yeah, I've got two things on that. One, please criticize fucking 40-year-old movies or 1-year-old movies. Say what you want. two, I think. Because you were commenting more on the loose nature of it, correct?
Yeah,
The overlapping dialogue, so that's more the influence of, like, Robert Altman movies. So, a lot of those 70s movies, like, were made in that fashion specifically because the 70s was all about getting rid of the artifice, right? Like, the 60s was like, movies are these palaces, movie stars are untouchable, people in the 70s are like... people are people, you know, people don't talk like that. And then so Robert Altman movies were the ones that had a lot of people talking over each other and you couldn't make out the words and shit like that.
And you
that's
see
how I always took Goonies as like kids Altman.
I think that is, yeah. I mean, it's clear to me that was the goal. I guess I was, I found that surprising.
I
was taken aback. You know, I guess I was anticipating something more, you know, Spielbergian in the sense of it being more tightly scripted or even more Zemeckisian, shall we say. You know, yeah, you see that Altman influence in, I was taken aback by it the first time I watched Alien. A decade ago,
which I just rewatched the last couple weeks. So
yeah, that overlapping pattern, that Altman influence is so effective in a film like that because it gives you the sense that like these are real people. I would argue that it's less effective in a film like Goonies, which seems, at least to me, seems to want to have a more goofy, cartoony style, with each kid sort of having their own defining trait. You know, if they could have been color-coded in terms of their costuming, they if it was Goonies the animated series, you know, someone would always be wearing yellow and someone would always be wearing red. I wound on the side of describing it as having Spy Kids energy. I find it's got this manic, it's got a deliberately juvenile sense of humor, I think, to the point where it's okay that it defies logic. Like, that's fine. It doesn't need to wrap up untidy plot threads because that's not the point. But I was taken aback by that because that's not what I was accustomed to in terms of children's entertainment. In terms of the stuff, you know, the Zemeckis and the Spielberg stuff, the stuff that gets remembered doesn't have that same kind of energy.
But the Joe Dante does, which is also Amblin. Gremlins is manic.
I haven't watched Gremlins 2 a lot.
That is a loose script.
I haven't seen Gremlins 2 in a long time, but I did rewatch Gremlins fairly recently. Mm-hmm. And it is manic. It does have, it is wacky. It's playful, but the script is tighter. And maybe that's just part of the delivery. But I think just in terms of structure too.
It's interesting. And I mean, like, Goonies, and like, I like Goonies. I like Goonies.
I did not dislike Goonies in any way.
It's not like a holy movie for me. I think what's fun in that description, because it's Richard Donner that made Goonies. Yeah. And like, the thing about his Superman movies, which I love those first two Superman movies, all the Lex Luthor stuff is exactly what you described. It's the wackiest cartoon stuff. And going back to it is so weird with how, not only with how comic book movies are, but how all the rest of the Superman movie is. All the like straight-laced Clark Kent stuff, and Lex Luthor especially breaking out of prison. Go back, just watch Luthor breaking out of prison with Gene Hackman's goofy curly hair. It's slapstick. It's pure slapstick.
That's great. I also have not seen Donner's Superman in in years and years and years. So,
Yeah,
so that was my experience with Goonies.
So before I bring up another old movie, or the old movies that I watched. I read The He-Man Effect. The Box Brown book
that you guys were talking about last episode.
Which is, you know, mainly, I guess, centered around, you know, He-Man, Masters of the Universe. But I don't know, the main thrust of the book, you know, I took from it is how, you know, companies generate and prey upon nostalgia,
From Disney on.
from Disney on. But you know, I just did the way, and you know, I recommend anyone, you know, go and you know, look that up. But yeah, because it kind of starts with Disney and then ends up talking about toy lines, then like loops back around to talking about Star Wars at the end. Just, you know, how loose Reagan loosening regulations regarding children's television, because of course everything wrong with the world traces back to Ronald Reagan in some way.
It's a joke, but it keeps happening.
It keeps happening. Just these little things that happened about how it's like, okay, we're going to just make, you know, before you couldn't just have a show that was ostensibly an advertisement for selling toys. Now we can do that and maybe throw in your little, like, you know, the more you know at the end of the episode so that it seems like it has some kind of, you know, worthwhile
required lesson
to watch.
But it was the loophole stuff I thought was interesting on that too, where it's like the rule was there, but they were like, well, if the show is a commercial, then we can get away with it. That
or it's like, well, it's based on a comic book. We got a comic book made. It's based on that. So it's not a commercial. No, I don't know what you're talking about. Or like, we couldn't put commercials for our toys during the show that is a commercial. But, you know, again, looping that, you know, companies sell you the stuff as a child so that then you have those memories. So then as an adult, you're like, ooh, like I want to relive those nostalgic memories and go to Disneyland and like rewatch these shows and like rebuy these toys and such, you know. Rodimus Prime or Hot Rod, I just, you know, pulled up there. But like, you know, one of the things that stuck out to me is like when he's talking about Star Wars, I think it was specifically when he's talking about The Last Jedi, is how like, you know, the you know, playing as a child builds their personality, then something that corrupts those memories is seen as a personal attack. So when Dave's out there criticizing the Goonies, he is personally attacking people who have this strong nostalgia for the movie that's like part of their personality, and people react like, which is the Acolyte's fucking canceled.
It was sort of a better phrasing of what I was trying to get to since like fucking Mass Effect 3 is where I always go, which is like, because it is your identity. And that came up a lot with Batman too, where it's just sort of like, okay, so if this is tied to your identity and then somebody says this thing is bad, they are saying you are bad. And like people can't tell the difference. And then that's when shit goes wrong.
And also like if you have an expectation of what, you know, you want Star Wars to be, because this is what you grew up in Star Wars. And then if the Star Wars is not like that, then the Star Wars is bad. And anyone who likes it is bad.
I would read a book called The Star Wars is Bad, by the way. That sounds great, actually.
Everyone should. That He-Man book is fantastic.
I was trying not to oversell it, but I really enjoyed that one.
I think that's his best one.
Probably. Because it covers more than, you know, the subject in a way. You know, there's a stronger thematic thread. Like, the Tetris book is great. Andre the Giant's great.
Good story. Yep.
Oh, it's very cool.
Yeah. So, the old movies that I watched, get mad about if I liked or did not like them. So, all right. So, for the very first time ever, I watched Airplane.
Oh,
wow.
How do you feel?
It's so fucking weird, that movie.
Like, I have not seen Airplane as an adult. So,
like, it was funny. I laughed. It's bizarre. And something that feels like could never, ever get made today, because the premise is just like, you know, guy gets on a plane because he's trying to save his relationship with a waitress, and just, but, you know, all kinds of shit is happening that has nothing to do with that plot thread.
do you know, like, the sort of, and the backstory too? Because that was like, that wasn't just like a parody of a popular movie. That was like the exact script of like a movie that within, I forget if it was like 5 or 10 years ago, was like, you know, the crash of 77 or whatever it was, was like a very popular, just dramatic movie. And they just took that script and then did that. So imagine, you know, like if they did a comedy out of Munich. You know, somebody was just sort of like,
oh, geez,
you know, right.
They're just like, we're going to do a bunch of skits in the middle of it. And like one of the first things is, you know, when he's rolling up to the airport and the two announcers are like, you know, going back and forth. There's like an abortion gag in there.
Arguing about
whether you can park in the white zones or not. You're just upset about the abortion. Like, it's a perfectly safe. It's like, wow. It was fun and insane movie.
Great when that stuff holds up.
I watched Beverly Hills Cop.
I haven't gone back to that in a while.
This one I'm just like, it's fine. Didn't like blow me away. You know, the thing I would say is probably one of like my favorite movies now. Like, that movie was awesome. The Beverly Hills Cop is like, okay, you know, Eddie Murphy doing his thing, but like, I don't have that nostalgia for it. So I'm just like, oh, this is fine. You know,
and you're in that zone of like, it, so many movies have done that since then, you know, like it was kind of like the first to do that style of comedy. And he was like, fucking, you know, right. I forget if he was still on SNL or if he had just gotten off. So he's
this
like
was when he was like peaking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was like Eddie Murphy. And it's.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just, yeah.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it. It's good.
Yeah.
But as a first watch, it didn't like blow me away. In 2024.
Mm-hmm. Is Bronson Pinchot in that one?
Hmm.
Was Bronson Pinchot in that one? Is he in all of them?
He is. He's the effeminate would be doing like a French accent, I believe.
All right.
Yeah.
He's the
cousin Valky Bartokomis from Perfect Strangers.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I didn't think you watched Perfect Strangers, but that would be like Ben just woke up. I can guarantee it. But Pinchot's in 1 and 3, I believe. Supposed to be. 3 was the one that I watched first as a kid, so I was like, oh, this is great, and then found out that everybody hates that one, because it was just, like, a lazy sequel, apparently, and I have not gone back, but...
yeah.
What else you got?
What was your... I thought you had a question also.
Oh,
question. I don't remember what it was. Yeah. Oh, and more context for that Clerks ending.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Axel Foley and Judge Reinhold.
Ah! Yeah. Banana and Tailpipe. Yeah.
Banana and Tailpipe. And I watched Die Hard for the first time.
Okay.
Yeah, that was really good. That's
okay. Man, if that one I was gonna be very surprised, because like I know a lot of people go back to watch that one, and I'm like, that one is the blueprint at this point. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a super cool movie. I could finally weigh in on the Is It a Christmas Movie debate. Which I'm kind of like, yeah, but it's your favorite, like, it's your favorite Christmas movie just because it's Christmassy and you think it's cute to say it's Die Hard. Like, it is a Christmas movie, but come on, there's better Christmas movies. Come on, guys. Come on.
Kiss, kiss, bang, bang. Come on.
Yeah. So that was really good. Of course, Alan Rickman and all the reasons why just people shooting each other and
well, how about I mean did you see, kind of like looking back, the shit that they set up? Because I think like that's one of those things that like you're like, oh, it's a good action movie, and then you're like, oh, that script is like really good about like you know, in the airplane at the beginning, he's like setting up all the stuff about like it gives you all the information. It gives you the divorce, it gives you like the dude with like the, you know, if you're how to walk on broken glass or whatever. I forget the setup for the broken glass shit. It's kind of used in the same way that like that intro to Back to the Future is, where it's just sort of like, oh, it gave you the whole movie.
Like why he doesn't have his shoes on, basically.
Yes,
I guess, more or less. Yeah. And like all the, you know, Alan Rickman's plan is like seeded through the movie with like, why does he, because I guess you kind of think like, oh, he needs the trigger for the explosives because he's going to blow open the safe. And it's like, no, that's part of the later plan to blow up the roof so they can do their getaway.
Yeah.
And
the whole thing, like the reveal where he's just sort of like, oh, of course he doesn't know what John McClane looks like.
Yeah.
They were talking on walkie talkies.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that is fun.
The other thing I watched, which was not a first time watch, but it was the first time in a long time, was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And that movie fucking rules. That movie,
doesn't
so
it?
Good. Oh, it's so good. It's still so
it's
good.
So good. It's, I watched that plenty.
Oh, goddamn good. Dave, you gotta watch that movie.
Yeah.
Just
you get
incredible,
to, you get
incredible score. Oh my God. It just goes. Yeah. It's fantastic.
And I understand if like we were 10 years older and like had, you know, seeing Raiders when we saw Last Crusade, and then Last Crusade comes out and kind of retcons things and kind of like changes the plots, we would have been like, but also that movie is just a perfect blockbuster.
It's another indie adventure, whatever. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
And Dave, did you know that one of the reasons that movie cooks is because Tom Stoppard did a pass on the script?
I did not know like, that.
Yeah, that's what, like, the tip, like the airplane scene between Indy and Sean Connery, like all of like that stuff, like that like,
I don't know what that is because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I know, I know. But like, there's a reason like the dialogue really sings in that movie. Is like,
well, that's amazing.
They wanted him for it. Yeah,
that's very cool. I'm excited to get there.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah. Well.
What have you seen?
Did you see Alien Beast, the new one?
Yeah. I was going to say, that seemed like an easy one to go right
into. I didn't get to see it. I'm bummed. Yeah. But if it had come out like the weekend prior, I definitely would have seen it.
Okay. So I was talking over you guys. What movie are you talking about?
Alien Romulus.
Yes.
Romulus. No, I really enjoyed it. There is one thing that I really, really don't like.
Mm-hmm. And I can guess what it is.
I don't want to say because it's a huge spoiler, but I don't know how much of it is like out at this point. So I'm not going to say when you see it, you'll know it instantly. Right. But I thought they really nailed the mood between Alien and Aliens. Like I love Alien, but Aliens with the S, with a dollar sign, is the one that I can just throw on at any time. Like and I think this has a lot of that to it. I thought it did a lot of the work to set up the crew like early on, so like you actually give a shit about people. I thought the score was pretty good. Like it's shot well. Like I think I've heard a lot of good arguments from people that thought it felt too much like Alien Isolation, which Fede Alvarez has said was an influence. So there's unabashedly like that's there. So there are people
too much like the game that a lot of people really like and feel like was a good take on like, the Alien true. Property.
True, but like movie feeling like video game like sometimes doesn't work for people. Like I didn't agree. I didn't think it felt like a video game, but like I get the validity. I had a lot of fun with it. Like I was impressed that the one thing that I very, very much don't like didn't ruin the movie, and that it I still had a very good time with it going on. I saw that. I saw Strange Darling, which I really like. Probably not on your guys' radar, because I feel like this one's a little limited release. What sucks is that it's a movie that they're like, just go in blind, so I can't really like say much about it.
Okay.
But
Was it worth going in blind?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Like, it's another one that I think there are pretty valid arguments about the script in a couple like things, but it's shot on 35mm and it shows. Like it's very, very gorgeous, like kind of throwback color movie. What's one of the things that's interesting is it's the director of photography was Giovanni Ribisi.
Wow.
Who has very recent, like he's done a couple music videos. This is his first like feature and like it's shot good. Like it is a good looking, like it's like thriller horror kind of movie is genre wise. I don't even know what the trailer is because I didn't even watch the trailer.
That's very cool. As personally, as an actor who over the past decade has become increasingly interested in learning the other side of filmmaking. Good for Giovanni Ribisi. Good on him.
Yeah. It was just, and I didn't know going in. So like that credit popped up at the end and I'm just like, what? That's so weird. Another kind of like it's just the year of like original indie movies. I'm sorry, that's what like most of like, the best stuff is. So I'm like, I don't even know if this stuff gets around, but Cuckoo came out, which was just a fun horror movie with Dan Stevens that has this vibe of and Hunter Schafer that does a very good job, I thought, kind of thing, where it's a kind of a weird European director with an all-American cast for the first time. And it has that beautiful disconnect like plot wise where you're just sort of like, oh, they're just, what, this makes no sense. Okay, we're gonna go, the director likes this, we're gonna do this, cool, now we're gonna move on. And yeah, it's just kind of like the setup is really bare bones so that it can go super fucking weird places by the third act. It's just like, right, family vacation in Europe, you know, Dan Stevens is doing a silly German accent, just exactly the silly German accent you're picturing, hamming it up. He's just one of those guys. Beautiful. I love watching.
Yeah. I can totally picture that.
Yep. Yeah, that one's just another fun time. Yeah. Yeah, and they all, like, there's great gore for all of these, too. I feel like there's a lot of very distinct, like, Strange Darling, I went down a rabbit hole of, because the music is done by a person named Z Berg, and I'm like, who is this? And they played with Rilo Kiley, who you might remember was the little girl from The Wizard. also makes great music, and, like, a whole bunch of, like, modern, like, indie stuff. So it was and Cuckoo has a weird European soundtrack. Alien is popping. Like, there's some good tunes. Good tunes out there. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I only have one thing that would be, like, for TV, but, because I don't think I talked to you guys about this, but there's a YouTube channel called Pop Arena that I watch. Yep.
Yeah.
That does, yeah, all the Nickelodeon episodes chronologically. I've watched all of them. and the last episode was 100 minutes on Pete and Pete.
Yeah, I'm dying to watch this.
It's so fucking good. and like he researches so thoroughly.
Yeah.
Like that, he might not be the bright pronoun. The person that hosts the channel. And also, the person that hosts the channel definitely needs people on their Patreon and support and all that stuff. So, like, yes. I'm just trying to throw the name out there as much as possible at this point. If you liked, and not only, like, if you grew up with Pete and Pete, but also, like, it's such an interesting moment in Nickelodeon. There's a lot of stuff, there's so much stuff that I didn't know. And it leads into a couple movies from this year that I won't spoil because it'll give like a little warning. But there is ties to stuff, so it's a wild ride, man. No, it's good stuff.
Yeah, Pop Arena produces some fine YouTube right there.
All right. Yeah,
they're fantastic.
Like they know that there was. Well, I guess I watched both. Like there was. The Orange Years documentary that came out a year or two ago, but I thought because Pop Arena did You Can't Do That on Television documentary, that was better.
Yeah.
Honestly. So, and it's there for free, but join the Patreon.
Yeah. Great stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
That's all my watchings, weirdly enough. Ooh. Yeah. That's most of what I have this podcast.
Yeah, sure. No, hey, that's fine. I'm tired. You want content? No way. Sorry.
Again, it's up to the audience to maintain their own energy tonight, please.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, we got that Nintendo Direct to dive into.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I wanted to mention on the watch tip.
Watch tip.
The only... I mean, I did start watching Shogun. I think I'm like two and a half episodes into that. We're watching that.
I got to get the Shogun.
So far, so good. You know, I've heard heavy praise for it.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's a slow burn, especially that first episode where, you know, most of it's in a different language. The characters haven't clicked yet. But you know, it's one of those. Well,
In the first episode, I'm not quite sure where it's going yet. And like now the point I'm at, I'm like, OK, I see where we're going now. Like, OK, so but we haven't gotten back to an episode, I think, since my child wasn't at my parents' house. I did want to mention that I have watched a few episodes of Caped Crusader.
I also wanted to mention
show that. Fucking rules.
Yeah.
Dave was like to be able to like,
I know.
I would also like to state my fondness for that particular program.
Yeah. I think
so at least like I know that you because you said a few, which means at least you've watched that Clayface episode.
I watched the first episode. I'm not Catwoman. That's the second episode.
Yeah.
Second episode?
Number two. Yeah.
Yep.
Because the first episode's Penguin. Third episode's Catwoman.
Sorry. Yeah. Is episode five something spectacular that people talk about? Because I'm on episode four.
I haven't got to it yet. All
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't remember what. But no, I don't know. I really like that Clayface episode, so I think
that was very, very good.
Yeah. They've all been good.
Yeah, it's interesting how the show is. So, you know, the original Batman the Animated Series is one of my favorite television shows of all time, not cartoon, just shows. Yeah. When we did a top 10 show, it was my number two. It's freaking up there. I love that show. That is Batman for me, is that show. That's what I key all of my Batman knowledge and love on. I mean, I've read some comics and storylines, so not 100%, but it's like pretty much that's my main Batman touchstone. And when, you know, they changed things, when they changed the visual style and went to Adventures of Batman and Robin or whatever it was called.
Yeah, the new adventures of Batman and Robin.
I was like, this show is dead to me. Have you gone back? No, I just don't like the art style. I agree. Character redesigns.
if you can kind of like hold your breath a little, like, I'll go back to specific episodes like Mad Love, like the last one, you know, the Harley one and stuff like that. Like, I think it helps with some distance. Like at the time I was the same way. Like I hated, but
yeah,
I don't know. And at this point it's just like more from that team, you know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's more like it's right after, and it's like,
yeah,
so similar that it's very hard to like, mm-hmm. pull one from the other, because, you know, I like Batman Beyond. Like, if they had done Batman Beyond and then been like, oh, we're gonna go back and do some of this stuff again, it would be like, ah, okay, sure. And I know there's like some episodes that are okay, but, you know, this feels like, you know, they're trading on the animated series, but I don't know, they're getting away with it. Because it's, you know, there's enough that's like a little bit different, but they're, you know, a lot in terms of like the tone and like that kind of slightly out of present day, like a little bit old timey setting, and the just kind of the shadowing of the world, all work, and you know, it's not exactly the same. Like Bruce Wayne is playing it more of like the playboy, like you know, Christian Bale did in like Batman Begins and stuff like that, where he looks like more of a dope, like who could not, he's not being like a sturdy good guy the way that Bruce Wayne is in the animated series.
And Kevin Conroy is still my favorite Bruce Wayne. Like, that's not even like a question.
But Hamish is so close.
He does a very good job. Good.
Without sounding like an impression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's, I mean, voice wise, yeah, like this is more like writing wise, whereas like, stop picking on Alfred, baby.
I didn't think it was that bad, but I just felt like he's like very stern. Like there's not a warmth there.
I love Hamish's performance.
I think it's a wonderful contrast. Like at this point, I'm four episodes in and I don't know. It's a real toss up for me right now, which is the better reboot, this or X-Men 97, because it's a fascinating case study in contrasts with the way that X-Men 97 deliberately is a like direct sequel. Like it is for continuity, it continues the story directly, trades on the nostalgia, but then, as I discovered, you know, begins it in a place that honored the kid-aimed sensibilities of the show, but then grew it throughout the season to reflect the way the audience had also grown. Like it stretched itself out and grew throughout the season this really wonderfully intelligent way. Whereas Batman's taking this very different take, right? It's like a do-over. It's like, we are going to in video game terms, it's a reimagining, right? We're going to try to accomplish the same goal.
It's like if they were making the animated series now.
Yes.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, and, you know,
Yeah. But also for us, I think, for an adult audience, you know, there's death here. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's where I think the animated series would have shied away from outright killing characters. This one does not. And so it achieves. And also it feels less afraid to explore the darker parts of Bruce's psyche as well.
And you know, part of that. Well, I was going to say, I mean, it's kind of the intention that they had in the first place, but, you know, they were on Fox Kids.
Yes.
You know, we've all gone back to animated series 1,000 times, and, like, they do so many clever tricks to get around it that feels like they're fighting and punching people in the face. Yeah. But, boy, it's still shocking when they actually show it.
yeah. The gloves are off now, and it's oh God, it's thrilling to watch.
During the Clayface episode, where he gets like socked in the face, like Clayface gets punched in the face, so there's like knuckles in the face, and like Richard was like horrified by that. Like he had a moment of horror, like watching the show, just like, oh God, this is ghastly. And it was like, oh yeah, this is working.
Well, and body horror is one of those things, like body horror in kids, like it is the worst. It affects you the most.
Yeah.
Wonderful use of Diedrich Bader, a former Batman himself, as Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, that guy sucks.
Like, they didn't really give him an arc on this one. It's just sort of like, oh, he's a dick, which is fine.
So far, it's just like, he's just this playboy running for mayor, hotshot district attorney. Just such a dick.
Something I do wish, obviously this does feel like it's targeted at an adult audience, but were it to be shown, I think it would still play to a young audience too. There's nothing about it that's so adult that kids couldn't enjoy it. And I love the influence that it draws from Matt Reeves' Batman is that it makes the police corruption so overt, you know, which is a thing I would love for kids to get to be. It's a very subversive thing, I think, for young minds to see on a show. So I'd love to see my kids are watching a lot of police being idiots on The Simpsons, but they really get to see police being outright evil, at least in fiction. Yeah.
Like, I think it, because, Lauren came and, sat down, somewhere during, I don't know, we were watching episode 3, but it got to, you know, towards the end, and, Bullock and that other cop are about to just murder Catwoman, and she was like, what's going on? Like, oh, yeah, no, these are shitbags. That's been established.
Yeah.
Well, so, it wasn't a movie I was going to talk about, because it's a weird one, but, in Lost Media, somebody found... There was you might have seen the poster at some point, because the internet was looking for this.
Oh,
for forever,
is this the you're about to say what it is. Yeah,
it was called Playing with Fire. It was a Gary Coleman made for So they found it, and of course I watched it. and it's very funny. It's honestly a little better than I expected, but Gary Coleman setting things on fire is fun. But my tie into the conversation is it was making me think, because it's got Yaphet Kotto as the one good cop, which is the trope that we grew up with, I think, in a lot of cases, where they weren't afraid to say the cops aren't always good, but there was always one cop. And that cop, I mean, on Batman, it was Bullock, and, I mean, Commissioner Montoya. Gordon, of course.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And Montoya. But I feel like that trope just, kids are too smart at this point. I don't think that trope honestly comes off as cheesy anymore. Like, you can't even pull it off in the modern world. I'd be curious if it's still there, or if it makes a comeback, or what. I mean, that's what Beverly Hills Cop is, in a way, too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it persists in Caped Crusader, obviously, you know, but again, is that how many kids are watching that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So cool.
That's a good show.
Yeah. Video games.
Video games.
Yeah. As I told Dave, the only one I've got is I picked up a Picross on the Picross sale.
So, oh, nice.
You know, Like
specifically number five, because
yes, I got number five because I was presented with so much choice that I had to do some research, go on Reddit, see what people's opinions are, and you know, it was mostly like the Genesis one isn't as good as you think. It didn't give you as many screens or something, and don't play the first couple. Like, there's some quality of life stuff. And, you know, which is kind of funny, but also, like, on the sale, those first two Picross were priced cheaper, and I'm like, okay, there's something different here. So
Jupiter's aware that there's something wrong with that.
Yeah. So I just pick one right in the center, and it's great. You know, it's Picross. Yeah. Like, you know, the biggest thing I want is Picross 3D3, but, you know, how or when is that ever going to happen? No, but...
Weiss, here's a dumb question I didn't think to ask you before. Yeah. When you're playing it, do you play with buttons or are you tapping touchscreen with your finger?
Nah, I like buttons. Like that's faster for me, especially like I'm playing right before bed and I don't like using a stylus. I can just drop it or like I won't use my, I don't even like using my finger on touchscreen.
Well, I don't still, either, like, which is... Part of why I've been hesitant to pick up the Switch ones is because my ideal Picross is on a DS's capacitive touchscreen with a stylus.
Yeah. No, those are, I still prefer playing on the 3D or on the, DS or 3DS ones, but it's still,
this is what we have.
It gets the job done. Yeah. And there's so many of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a buffet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to remind my child that those exist. He got super into Picross for, you know, like a few days and then I forget. Yeah.
Yeah.
He just, the thing is, just like with the way he is, he just forgets that games exist.
Yeah. There's so many of them.
There's so much.
There's so many. Yeah. I know. It, like, can you imagine? Yeah. Especially when your parents, you have a video gamer parent, it's just like, oh, there's just a billion games all the time. You don't have to wait for Christmas because your dad also wants to play Astrobot this weekend.
I had 24 Nintendo games. On the original before I stupidly sold them and then rebought them.
Yeah, all of us old folks are just like, oh, yeah, it was birthdays and Christmas, and maybe you could scrounge something in the middle of the year, but it was like basically you'd have three games a year, sort of.
Yep.
Maybe borrow stuff from friends, rent things, just scrape games wherever you could, and now it's just like, you know, I get like reports in my email of what he does on his laptop and what he does on the Xbox. So I know what he's playing and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And like, there was one week I was like, man, he sure was using a web browser a lot. What was he doing? And I'm like, I asked Lauren, like, well, what's he been doing on there? And he's like, oh, he's playing this soccer game, whatever. So it's like, he's on this website. I don't remember the name of it. Something might be like pop.gg or whatever. But anyway, what it does is it cloud hosts like mobile games. Mm-hmm. Oh. So like it's a way for people to play, you know, you can play mobile phone games on there without having a phone.
Okay.
So he's been playing, EA mobile FIFA, whatever it is on there, like a buttload. And like because he'd also been telling me like, no, I've played the Five Nights at Freddy's games. And I'm like, where? How? And he's like, on my computer at school. And I'm like, have you? But like, yeah, sure enough, like there's some website he found that just hosts like some of the Five Nights at Freddy's games that he's played it on. And like, yeah, I'm just like, okay, yeah, you just playing things in a browser. Like, you know, I got to keep a close eye on this kid to make sure he's not getting stuff. But I'm like looking up, researching these websites, looking for like any excuse to be like, no, you can't be on that. And it's just like, people are just like, no, it's fine. You just play the mobile games, like whatever. Sometimes it doesn't work, but whatever, it's free. And I'm like,
okay. Mm-hmm.
We did go to the retro game store and I got him a copy of FIFA 22 for under $10 for Xbox. Right. So he can play some FIFA on the TV. Like, come on, you know, this, but still it's just like wild. Yeah. But yeah, anyways, in regards to that, direct that you mentioned.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that was the day that the teachers came back.
Okay.
So like, And like, so I was like super busy the day before. I was like that morning and just like I ended up having to just kind of sit in the odd to babysit something for a little bit. And that's why I was scrolling through Twitter and I was like, oh, this Tetris collection looks phenomenal. Uh-huh. That's
well, that's why I sent you such an innocent text because I'm like, you're not watching the thing.
I was like, oh, Tetris thing. And then I like scrolled back and it said something about like Pizza Tower now being out on Switch. And I was like, is there something going on right now? And then you texted me right after.
Okay.
And I was like, I had no idea it was even happening.
Yeah. I mean, these things pop up real quick, which, you know.
Yeah, they announce them the day before usually. Yeah. Or sometimes the week before if it's a big direct. But yeah, the indie ones, the partner directs, just like, yeah, tomorrow, here it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, seeing that like before Capcom Fighting Collection Volume 1 has released, they have already announced Capcom Fighting Collection Volume 2.
Project Justice.
Which is just like, hey kids, did you like the Dreamcast?
Yeah.
Yep.
That was like laser targeted.
Like, oh yeah. And, well, and also, I assume they got the rights, because I think I don't know if all of them, but I think most were made by the same person/group, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm guessing licensing, they're like, we're going to throw in your direction. Mm. It felt like, oh, okay, we worked out the rights, we're going to buy everything from this group. I don't know.
Yeah. Or it's like, I mean, it's, you know, it's Capcom stuff, so...
Am I wrong?
I feel like it's... more just they, I don't know, because they must have been working on it for a while, I would think, or maybe
as far as
it was
I'm
something
aware,
they could just throw into the engine for the fighting collection that they already had, and they saw the reaction to the first one. They were like, well, shit, we can do another one. People want CVS? Here you go.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect... They, as far as I'm aware, a lot of them were directed by completely different teams from within Capcom. Like, I don't think the Power Stone team was the same team working on like Capcom versus SNK games. As far as I'm aware, I could be mistaken.
Yeah.
But the thing that immediately stuck out to me is. Oh, well, they've, you know, they've perfected their Naomi / Dreamcast emulator and to the degree that, you know, they want to show people the hitboxes because I believe, again, this is I'm half recollecting that the hitboxes in Dreamcast Alpha 3 are somewhat different than they are in any other version. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that that's a feature I do think is telling that there must be some community that's like, oh yeah, the hitboxes in Dreamcast Alpha 3. I want to be able to see those. I want to be able to practice with those. I want to practice mode for that because that's a feature that they showed off in the reel. There is at least one game that is not a Naomi / Dreamcast game that I think is like Namco. It's the Namco hardware that was based off PlayStation 2. I think that's the Capcom Fighting Evolution.
So
that does seem to be the odd duck out, the one that I can't really explain, especially because
it seems like
hated.
It's not great. Yeah,
it seems like they could have just had Tecromancer in there and rounded out the like the Dreamcast fighting games. I'm not complaining. Capcom vs. SNK, Capcom vs. SNK 2, Project Justice is just incredible. Yeah. Like this,
yes,
first release of a rival tools game in over 20 years.
Yeah, good lord. Yep.
Like, holy shit, that game is good.
Power Stones.
And the Power Stones, yeah.
And the Power Stones.
Oh, man. Give us they did, like, what, the Power Stone collection for PSP that we
15
never...
15 years ago, yeah.
That we got, but, like, you know, it's a PSP game.
Yeah.
What are you doing? And now it's like, you could just... Can we play 4-player Power Stone 2 online? What?
Yay! Yeah.
Oh, that's insane.
So happy about this.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a gift. So yeah, that's absolutely on that. That's awesome.
Alpha 3 for me specifically, because I have long longed for one of the console ports of Alpha 3 as opposed to the there've been several re-releases of the arcade ROM now, which is great, which is fine, but you know, it's the console releases that had all the extra characters, and we still don't have Eagle and Maki and Ingrid from the PSP version, but we've got everybody else at least.
I mean, two of those were in the Game Boy Advance version, too.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Angrid, I think, kind of sucks anyway, but whatever. Eagle's fun. Eagle's
great.
Yeah, Eagle's great. Game.
Yeah. But whatever.
Yeah. That Tetris collection is fascinating, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will definitely get it and check it out. Although the game selection, as I've seen discussed online by people who know more than me, does seem curiously limited by what they could get the rights to, or what they were allowed the rights to by the Tetris.
Sure. Company. Yeah. But, you know, they're doing their documentary work. They're getting stuff out there. It's fine.
I hope it is my hope that without that stuff, the documentary aspect of it is up to their usual standards, because honestly, that's the only bummer in their Gold Master series are those moments when they touch upon something in either the archival footage or in the text. And it would be great to play that. And they can only talk around it. And I'm like, okay, well, that's a bummer. Obviously, you know, for the sake of completeness, they did their best. I don't begrudge them that. But it is the only thing that's ever a tiny minor bummer. I'll be getting it regardless. You know, I'm fascinated to see that particular branch of Tetris history. I think it'll be really interesting.
Yeah.
To save my own ass on the Capcom fight, so Hideaki Itsuno did make most of those games. So he directed Street Fighter Alpha, Rival Schools, Power Stone, and Capcom vs. SNK.
Oh, wow.
And Devil May Cry in there, which is a part
in,
of it.
But, in there at some point. Okay.
But, I think that's everything except Evolution and maybe Plasma Sword. Plasma Sword's in there.
But, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. For some reason, I thought that the Capcom vs. SNKs was a different team, but I stand corrected.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's rad.
But
fantastic.
Man, that's rad.
God, I love Capcom versus SNK 2. I love that game so much.
It's real good. I really like the first one too. I think the first one's also awesome.
I think that's what's
cool about these collections, because like much like Paddington 2, you have to tell people go back and watch the first one. It's great. It's still great.
Yeah, there's still a lot to love.
Just because the sequel, just because Streets of Rage 2 is better. Doesn't mean, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't supersede the original necessarily. Yeah. In that particular, in the Capcom versus SNKs, they are such different games. The sequel definitely does not supersede the first one. I like the sequel better, but they're very different.
Like even Marvel versus Capcom, like just for the music difference alone.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? That one too. What else did they announce? In that, I'm trying to remember now.
They talked about the Suikoden collection, which is a real thing still. It's been a while since we heard about that. Yeah. Dragon Quest.
Oh, the Suikoden one. Yeah.
Well, we're about to transition out of this. The Castlevania Dominus collection.
All right. Now we can talk about games.
Some stuff to talk about.
Yeah. Time to walk away from that into things that, I ended up purchasing to play some of, which I didn't. Initially, I was like, oh, that's good. I mean, the thing that put me over is the haunted castle they did a remake.
Holy shit.
They remade Haunted Castle for no fucking reason. This is not a DS game. It's not something anybody wanted or was asking for. They've put out Haunted Castle. Like, they could have just thrown Haunted Castle on there. It would have made more sense. But it's just like, here's these 3DS games, which is, you know, obviously like a companion to the first Castlevania collection and the GBA one. And then it's like, here's the DS games. Awesome. We're there. And also, here's this other little thing we did with, you know, music from Chibitech in there. And it's so cool.
It's so cool. I never got to spend a lot of time with Castlevania Rebirth, which a lot of people are, you know, sort of framing this as a follow-up to, because that was the last time M2 created an original Castlevania game was Castlevania Rebirth.
I really enjoyed Rebirth. I mean, love my Belmont's Revenge. So any excuse for
Yeah, you know, I mean, Rebirth, I love Belmont's Revenge, and I would love to see M2 smooth over the ever so slightly rough edges of that game.
Certainly, to
the same degree, because I don't have any fondness for the original Castlevania adventure. It needed a makeover in the same way that Haunted Castle does. So, like, seeing them apply that same patina of magic and to specifically to an arcade game, which is great, because what Haunted Castle Revisited does to great effect is recapture these sort of the aspects of the arcade game that are intended to be spectacular, like graphical effects, big boss fights, big sprites, you know, the cool stuff going on in the backgrounds, amazing music by Chibi Tech, you know, the audio visual bombast of an arcade game of that era is really beautifully realized here to a degree that Rebirth wasn't concerned with. It didn't have to be concerned with.
Yeah,
it's just totally such a fun playthrough.
Yeah, it's they just made a new single player classic Castlevania game,
I love the inspired by, which I guess is like, that's what I thought was so cool about Rebirth, where it's just sort of like, oh, they're going to jam both of them together. It's not a remake of one or the other. They're kind of taking best ofs, and they're taking artistic liberty. They're like, well, we want to do this. So,
yeah, they need more to do of a Rebirth collection with those three games just to get them out there.
Good God, they do.
But also on this collection are some good Castlevania games. I've been playing quite a bit of Dawn of Sorrow, which is nice because, you know, I played a lot of Aria of Sorrow. That's one of my favorite Castlevania games. I played it relentlessly at the time. When I went back to revisit it, I was kind of annoyed because, like, I've played it so many times that I have, like, habits in that game. I use the same souls, like, without even thinking about it. I beeline for where the whip sword is. Yeah. But Dawn of Sorrow, I only played through once, so I don't have quite as strong a memory of it. And I'm just kind of rampaging it. So, at the time, it came out the year, like, after Aria of Sorrow, and it felt like very much more the same. Like, okay, I'm getting these souls again. It's not that much. That Aria of Sorrow was awesome, and now we're just kind of doing that again, and we have these clunky glyphs we have to write on the screen with the stylus. And, you know, now it's like, okay, well, I haven't played a Dawn of Sorrow. I don't have that strong of memories of it, so it feels very fresh to me. You don't have to draw things on the screen if you don't want to.
Yes. that alone.
Yeah, you can
play that.
Yeah, you know, because at first I was you know, drawing on the screen with my finger to do them, and then, like, I noticed that there was button prompts, and I'm like, oh, I can just hit the buttons and go do 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 do.
Yeah. Oh my God! I mean, that's the biggest problem with that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a problem using the touchscreens. One of the problem with the DS is I had to, like, have the stylus at the ready for when I beat the boss.
Yes.
So that I had to pick it up and then draw the glyph. Like, when I don't have to pick up a stylus and I'm just drawing with my finger, I wasn't really having a problem.
Oh, okay.
The fact that I can just go bing, bang, boom with buttons, even better. Who cares? they have, you know, it plays not dissimilar from the way a DS game does on an emulator, but they have multiple screen layouts that you can use and choose from and mess around with. It plays great. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was deeply intrigued by what their solutions were, because in all the screenshots, I was like, there's like three different panels going on here. Like, this in action, this feels like it will be information overload. So I was curious to pick it up and see what the different screen options are. And ultimately, yes, that one is the best. The one that shows you the main screen as large as it can possibly be, plus the map, plus your status.
I do a two screen version.
So I find,
I found with the three that it was, like, tougher to read the smaller ones. So I was like, oh, I'll just toggle between them. 'Cause you just hit select or whatever to toggle between them, and it's no big deal.
But in the two screen version, the main gameplay screen becomes quite a bit smaller, doesn't it? I don't think I was willing to sacrifice that.
No, I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
All right. It wasn't, like, stretched as much at that point.
Okay.
Because there's different, I mean, hey, There's options for whatever you want, baby. You can stack two screens on top of each other if you want.
The only thing that's missing that I do kind of wish that they included is the option to just do one screen or the other at a time and toggle between them with a button press. That's the one thing that I wish. I can't fault them for wanting to put always have the map on screen in some fashion. But I do kind of wish that I could do that. That's my only minor complaint. But yeah, Tim, like you, I have not played through Dawn of Sorrow. I only played it through once, so I don't nearly have the muscle memory for that one as I do. And playing through it again, I'm reminded at why I wasn't, I guess, thrilled by it. For me, it was less the touchscreen stuff and more that, yes, at that time I was a bit, I had a bit of Castlevania fatigue probably was beginning to set in. But also just, I don't think Dawn of Sorrow has that ineffable inspiration that Aria has. Aria's everything about Aria's stage design, layout, and visuals all comes together in this really beautiful way. Whereas Dawn of Sorrow makes those quality of life improvements. You know, like, God, I wish that I could assemble two layouts, two payloads of buildouts, I guess, of inventory and toggle between them in Aria, because that is a wonderful quality of life update in Dawn. It's just Dawn is, I don't know. This stuff is interesting. It's cool that they try to do, like, put you in different places that the series hadn't really explored. I just don't love that place. I don't love that place. I don't like the way that they draw. I hate the art. I hate the art style compared to the more watercolor painterly style of Aria, and the way that the characters are written. They're so goddamn talky and chatty. And
they went more anime.
It went so
they
much more anime.
Much more
so
anime
cutesy
in
and,
Dawn of Sorrow.
Yeah. Drives me a little nuts. Otherwise, yes. These
playing
are,
it. Yeah.
Yeah, playing it. Playing all three, in fact. And Weiss and I were talking about this a little bit before. That GBA collection is one astounding game, and two games you'll probably never go back to. You might try once, never go back to. Whereas this is three, if not astounding, incredibly solid Castlevania installments that are more than worth the price of admission.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With Haunted Castle and a remake of Haunted Castle.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That's like
who
the
knew
kind
that
of
that
thing
would be
that,
the main
like,
draw.
Yeah, that in like 20 years, people are going to be like, oh, man, you need a copy of this collection because it has this crazy Haunted Castle remake they did on it and then never released anywhere else. It's only on that collection.
Right.
Which you can get easily because it's still available on Steam. But maybe. hopefully.
Yeah, that's great. That whole thing is great.
Continuing on Konami stuff, I played some Vampire Survivors with guns. that is the Contra update they did for Vampire Survivors. Which is it's fun, it's cool. It's they put a bunch of Contra shit into Vampire Survivors, which is a good game, and I like Contra and I like Contra weapons and the setting. They did some fun stuff. I actually haven't unlocked the second Contra stage yet, but the first one, you know, is just full of fun Easter eggs and stuff. My problem with Vampire Survivors right now is that I have to like find a way to make it harder for myself because I'm too good. I know how to build things up now and pop off and
the runs last too long, right?
They're all 30 minutes long now. So like I have to dial things in a little bit more.
This is paid DLC, yes?
It's $2.
Okay.
But yes, all everything with Vampire Survivors is filthy cheap. The game's $5. Dave. All the DLCs are like $2 or $1.50.
Yeah, but that's still something that will stop me from ever.
I mean, there's more than enough content in base Vampire Survivors.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's the only reason I haven't bought a lot of their upgrades.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, honestly, like, you know, they did the first update, which came with like a map and some characters, and was cool. It was a good size of content with what they'd put in there. There was like one main stage that was very large with lots of different areas. It was fun to explore. The second DLC they did was kind of similar in scope. Just, you know, big map, lots of cool areas to explore. And this was like all original stuff that they had made up.
Yeah.
And then it was like, well, here's the Among Us one, which I'm not into Among Us. at all.
Yeah, but you've seen The Thing, so now
I've seen
you
The
Thing.
Yeah, I understand it, but like, yeah, and it was just like, here's a ton of characters and items in like one stage that I'm not as interested in. And the Contra one is kind of like that, in that there's a ton of new characters and weapons, and it's kind of becoming a bit too much. And you can turn that stuff off. And it's I have to get in there and like customize my Vampire Survivors experience a little bit more, I think. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it makes it less digestible when it's like, oh, I have like a dozen characters to unlock and play through with their different weapons, as opposed to like four or five, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, whatever. I'm still playing Vampire Survivors like over a year later. So,
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And and for the amount of value that that dev provides with these content, like mm-hmm. they deserve that money. In no way am I saying that they don't. Like, this is incredible value for the money.
It's more just the way things are structured makes me less likely to, more than like the worth itself.
Yeah.
It was just kind of I still feel bad that I only paid $5 for that base game. Like, what are you doing? You should have charged so much more.
I know. Well, I've bought it in multiple locations by now.
I have bought it like three times. Yeah. I bought on Xbox and Switch as well. So I've given that dev some cash.
Yeah.
Dave, you play anything else?
I did. I have played like 10 to 20 minutes each of several games. I'll go through them real quick. X-Zodiac is a Star Fox alike.
Yep.
That's
on Steam.
That's on Steam. That's in early access on Steam right now. It's dirt cheap. Mm-hmm. I think it's, again, it's like $5 or less. I think I got it while it was on sale. That's really good. That is
it's really good.
Continuation of the style of the original Star Fox and Star Fox 64. It's another one of those, and it's of very, very good quality. Gravity Circuit is a Mega Man like kind of action platform game. Feels very Mega Man-ish. Mega Man X through a more 8-bit graphical style. That's a very cool game that I'm looking forward to exploring a little more. It's I don't know, it's kind of like Mega Man but Melee instead of blasters. So it's unique. It's got a unique hook, but it's very everything about the gameplay and the like the physics feels very Mega Man.
That's half off right now, too.
That's half off right now. Awesome. Well, it was free. I think free with Amazon Prime, with Prime Gaming. That's how I grabbed it. Mm. Tried the demo for Tengo Project's Shadow of the Ninja remake.
That's sitting there for me.
Yeah, that is a beautiful game that is very hard. So I need to put my nose to the grindstone at that demo again and see if I can get good scrub. Because boy, that game just looks so rewarding. The gameplay feels so good and mm-hmm. that's a hell of a time, but boy, yes, it is difficult. I have not yet tried Pizza Tower, but I did try the demo for Anton Blast, which is that other Wario style game. And I like Anton Blast a lot, boy. And that was fun.
I played that demo. Yeah.
I'm curious between Anton Blast and Pizza Tower. I'm curious to see what people tend to prefer, because what I like more about Anton Blast is that they're really going for a GBA style resolution. Like this, they are going for Wario Land 4 specifically, and that's what appeals to me, since that's my favorite Wario Land. So yeah, I'd like to try Pizza Tower, but so far Anton Blast is wowing me. Lastly, but certainly not least, I noticed that a game that me and my daughter played at MAGFest this past year called Sloppy Forgeries is finally going to be commercially released on Steam. It's been in development, and the developer has been showing it off at conventions and shows and stuff for like 5 years. And I remembered getting home from MAGFest, and that was the one I was like, oh, Sloppy Forgeries. We had more fun with that than any other game that I tried. I'm going to buy that as soon as I got home, only to discover it was not yet commercially available. So when I saw that the developer finally announced a Steam release early next year, I tweeted about it, tweeted how much I enjoyed playing it at MAGFest. And the developer very kindly gifted me an early preview copy of the game. So here I am, excitedly.
Hang on, I gotta write a tweet.
What?
I gotta write a tweet real quick. Look at this info. Look at this info motherfucker over here.
I wholeheartedly, not just because of the obvious quid pro quo here that's going on, but I wholeheartedly recommend this game called Sloppy Forgeries, a hilariously, very addictively fun party game in which two people compete to redraw famous public domain works of art using a mouse. And like very basic Microsoft Paint tools, you have exactly 3 minutes to see who can more accurately redraw Whistler's Mother or Starry Night or, you know, any of the wave at Tucker, the Great Wave, you know, any other number of public domain pieces of classical art. and it's great because your drawings always turn out terrible. They always look like absolute garbage, but the game, you know, is able to rate how accurately you matched the general proportions of it. And so you're assigned a score it's great. It's really simple.
Like a Mario Party mini game that I think is kind of like this.
Is there? Oh, yeah.
I feel like it.
Yeah. Like draw Mario's face.
Yeah, draw Mario's face or something.
Or like reassemble the elements of Mario's face. You look at it and then it flips over.
Yeah. Maybe it's like that. It's a lot like that. You're like putting it together. Yeah, you're trying to, and then you have a good laugh at how bad you made it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's perfect party game fodder. It's so much fun. And so I'm actually playtesting it for the developer Jonah Warren right now, because it didn't work with my mice. I tried.
Wow, you are on the take. Even.
I'm fully yes, very much. I am. I'm a collaborator.
You're gonna be in the credits, Dave.
I'm aiding and abetting the enemy here, but the enemy is very cool. So I'm happy to be aiding and abetting him. So please wish list Sloppy Forgeries by Jonah Warren on Steam.
I just did while you were talking about
that's it. Well, there's one. if I only reach one person with my love of Sloppy Forgeries, who already knew about it, it will have all been worth it. So
I was already pretty much sold on Sloppy Forgeries.
Sloppy Forgeries.
We're seeing it and being like, oh my God, that's hilarious. What a great idea.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It's great. All right. Those are my games.
Cool.
Nice.
Apotris, Dave. Apotris?
Oh, Apotris? Yeah. That was on my list. I was going to ignore it, but Apotris.
Yeah. Apotris, yeah.
A homebrew version of Tetris for Game Boy Advance, which, as I was raving to Weiss earlier, is a platform that is second only to Doom on running on virtually anything. So Apotris is wonderfully accessible, and it is a slick, beautifully playing version of Tetris.
Yeah, it is a modern feeling with modern accoutrement, like Game Boy Advance version of Tetris that rips.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Real good. Yeah, I loaded that up on my analog pocket. It feels fantastic. It's great.
Highly customizable as well. You can customize the rule sets to suit your particular favorite version of Tetris.
Yeah. You can customize the palette, like how the blocks look.
Yeah.
Like, is it going to look like the NES game or this version or this version? Do you want them shaded in this way? How do you want the background to look? And
do you want no grid, blank well?
Yep. Yeah. It's fantastic for that. Like, what a good version of Tetris it is.
Super good version of Tetris.
Yeah. So
Tetris Cup runneth over. There's a.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't get Jan sold on it. Jan is now playing. I've got Jan. I've bequeathed to her one of my older Anbernic portables, and
of which you have 80 because you buy a new one every month.
I do buy a new one every month. Well, that's how many they release. They're up to like 5 or 6 a month now. It's hard to keep up, and so she's been playing Tetris every night. And in order to find her a version with modern rules, like a hard drop, I had to get her a hack of the Game Boy version called Rosie Retrospection, which is people's favorite old new Tetris. And that version is wonderful. The Rosie Retrospection hack of Game Boy Tetris is because it is Game Boy Tetris. Game Boy Tetris visuals, you know, music with modern Tetris rules. It's wonderful. I now prefer Apotris, but I can't sell Jan on it. She's like, no, it's too, I think to her, it feels a bit too fast.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. It feels like Tetris 99 to me, but like as a one player thing, like it's that level of like twitchy speed when
that's smooth though.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's just, those pieces glide like butter,
I guess. Yeah. I play Tetris like an animal, but that's on me.
Yeah, you don't make love to Tetris. You fuck Tetris.
I do. I fuck Tetris. Because I'll just pull it out, you know, boot it up, and I'll do like
just whip it out.
The 150 line like score attack mode, because like, you know, I can get through that in a reasonable amount of time, and you know, see what my score is, and then put it down, and I'm like, yeah, that was great.
Boom.
Fantastic.
Whew. Wham, bam. Thank you, ma'am. Jeez, Tim.
Wham, bam. Thank you, ma'am. Just a couple things I'm going to talk about here in terms of video games. Remember Octopath Traveler 2?
Yeah.
Yeah, I stopped playing that game. I was having a good time with it. And then, like, oh, man, them and their fucking combat and their fucking bosses just... I don't know why they're making them such a pain in the ass in that game. Like, not every boss... needs to be some giant knockdown drag out fight that just, I feel like I'm trialing and erroring to figure out, cause I got like, what are their weaknesses? What are their big moves going to be? Like, why do they all have to be these big people that summon in like little minions? And it was just aggravating me and I wasn't getting enough out of it. Like I really enjoy like the walking around, the talking to people, like the role-playing aspect of it, like the abilities they give your characters just outside of combat. Like I was really feeling it like in a moment where like, oh, there's this guy who's guarding a shed and like, I want to get in that shed. Well, what options do I have? I can't talk it out. And it's like, okay, well, I'll have one of my characters like set an animal upon him to like knock him out and move him out of the way. And in that way, it felt like, oh, I'm like solving problems in almost like a Fallout kind of way. And that I'm using the abilities of my party to try to get around this issue. And I think if there was a lot more of that, or if there was more of that I was digging into, then it's just like this cycle of like, okay, go into town, talk to some people, wordy, 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 and then go into a dungeon, you know, fight these enemies. You know, it feels, it's like, I don't know. I have like a threshold of how much health I feel like an average enemy should have in a JRPG. And this game has exceeded it too much.
Yeah, no. I know that feeling.
Yeah.
That is an important, unspoken rule.
Yeah. It's like, it's not challenging me necessarily. I mean, it is, you know, there are battles that are challenging. Has its intricate battle system, but for the most part, I feel like this is just taking too goddamn long. Like,
yeah. And again, this is the Bravely Default team.
It
as
is
well,
the very
right?
Brave. Yeah, it is.
Oh, and I really enjoyed that first game, but also that is a consistent problem. I think across
it's
all
like,
of them.
There should be those moments where like a boss fight is like at that next level where it's like. But it's, I feel like everyone, like, well, I am just unloading on this guy, and now I have to go through that cycle again. And it's like, they hit very hard. Like this quest is at my level. I'm not sure what I'm not doing correctly. If there is something I'm not doing correctly, if they just want me to go and level up more. But it's like, yeah, it just hit a moment where I'm like, and I played like 16 hours of it. So I didn't play like a small amount.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no, this is just not doing it for me. Like, wow. I see the things that I like about it, but it's like, I can't, you know, I'm at a point where I'm not going to sit there and slog an RPG that I'm not having the best time on.
Well,
you know, I got too many RPGs I can play.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying people shouldn't try it out. Hey, there's a demo for you. And you can carry your progress over to the main game if you're digging it. But I think just for me and that developer, like, we're just not going to see eye to eye on, you know, between the Bravely Defaults and the Octopaths. Like, and going back to, like, the Final Fantasy III remake, which I feel like had some of that same stuff going on with it. It's just like there's a bit too much tedium. Like when I am playing a Dragon Quest, which, you know, people traditionally consider to be very grindy, like I'm getting through those battles. Like I know how to handle those monsters and move on. And they have all this personality to them that, you know, is fun in its own right. And rather than just being like, you know, fighting a lot of people in Octopath, but like, you know, and then you get to a boss fight and it's like, okay, well now I need to buckle down and use my strategy. And there's like a good, like level two or, you know, Persona games, which I feel like the battles are very snappy. Cause it's like, I'm going to pop off. I'm going to hit weaknesses, you know, all out attack, move on to the next thing. This it's like, you know, I'm hitting weaknesses on a standard like enemy mob and then like hitting them up a bunch. And then it's like, oh, they're out of their weakened state. And now I have to weaken them again. And this is just like, you know, some bat or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, like, what are we doing here? It's just too much time slogging around in battles. Not enough time going around doing other things, which was not a problem with Live Alive. You know, which is
that's good.
Not dissimilar because, you know, Octopath, like you have different characters you're playing around with, and they do a much better job in two of like having those characters interact with each other and just having generally, you know, more interesting stories and things going on. But, you know, Live Alive, it was just like so, you know, not, I don't know. It was just changing things up. You're moving around doing different things. And the combat was fun and,
this is between the two of you, you've between what you have both said about between Bravely Default and Octopath, I feel like you've articulated something I've never been able to put my finger on about the games from that developer and about what I had begun to feel about modern RPGs in general is exactly that. And it had honestly never occurred to me before that just too many enemies and too many bosses are just hit point sponges and. Mm-hmm. What the hell? I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it's not just me and not just this unconscious perception. I'm glad to feel that get validated.
Yeah. No, that's like
I was able to get through it in the first Bravely Default at the time. Like if I went back now, would I? I don't know.
Yeah. It's like when I played, you know, Chained Echoes, like I turned down the difficulty because things were just taking too long. Like it made the game, you know, substantially easier. I wasn't having to think as hard during combat, but like I also wasn't in combat like just forever. Sea of Stars, I was having that issue a little bit, but I eventually kind of figured out how to use the battle system such that it wasn't that much of a problem. I'm probably not going to explore that DLC, though I did like that game, but I'm just like, I'm not going to go back.
Damn.
That's unfortunately where I ended up on Octopath Traveler 2. That's fine. Yes. Went and traded into my local game shop because they give a decent amount of credit for things. Yeah. Well, I'm just like, I'm not going to go back to this game.
I just like, last time I traded stuff in, it was just not worth doing that trade anymore.
But. Yeah. Well, I don't mind. I took a bunch of my Dreamcast stuff to this shop. They gave me a good amount for it. I took my Marvel vs. Capcom 2 for PlayStation 2 there. They gave me like $100 for it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, it's like, I don't mind the rare handing stuff. Them over to a local shop, and it is easier than trying to eBay it away, which is just cursed to me at this point. too much hassle, too much money that eBay takes away. Fuck eBay.
I miss the, I would, you know, it's kind of what stopped me from buying games is losing that market of like, oh, if I buy a new game, I can resell it for at least 2/3 of the price, you know, recoup some of that.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, Octopath. I mean, it was literally on sale for $30 this week and I'm pretty sure I got at least $20 trade for it. So,
well, there you go. Perfect. You got 16 hours worth out of it.
Yeah. No, I am not, this is not me being like, oh, rats. It's fine. I'm just building up my war chest at this freaking independent game shop for when something rolls through that I really want.
Well, that's also nice to hear about Live Alive too, because between a lot of, you know, all of, a lot of Square's modern, you know, this retro style output that has been between that and Octopath too. I wasn't sure which one I was more interested in checking out first, but
it's Live Alive for sure. All right. Yeah. Oh, that game is so fun. Yeah. Because like each chapter is like an hour maybe, and then like once it all comes together, that's, you know, maybe 10 hours of the game unto itself, like 12 hours the back end when you're using all the characters and finishing things up, and
easy breeze.
Yeah,
it's all I want.
I mean, it was still like a 30 hour game for sure, but it's like it's a 30 hour RPG as opposed to Octopath, which I've heard is like 80.
Yeah.
Right.
The other thing I played that I want to talk about is called, I'd be surprised if either of you heard of this game, Kintsugami, Path of the Goddess.
I've heard of this game, but I don't know what it is.
All right, so this is a Capcom game. You may have heard of Capcom. This is like a Capcom, I don't know, you know, Capcom's doing Capcom things, putting out Resident Evils and Street Fighters and collections and Monster Hunters and stuff. And this is like some other random original thing they decide to do. I think it's like $50, which is, you know, budget priced in the year 2024. It's on Game Pass. So it's kind of like a tower defense sort of slash town builder type deal. So it's like you have there's like this mountain that the game takes place on that's been overtaken by this like vile demonic corruption. It's like set in, you know, sort of kind of like a fantasy medieval Japan setting. So, think of that. So you're like a samurai ninja guy and the enemies are these demonic, you know, looks like out of Japanese mythology, basically is like what they look like. And it's been taken over by this and you are this spirit that has been revived by the goddess that you may have heard of in the title of the game. To try to help her, you know, cleanse and revitalize the mountain and take it back from this vile evil. So you'll go into a stage and there will be, you have to get the goddess from one end of the stage to the other. There is a path. Again, you might have heard of this path in the title of the game. Where you'll get this currency that you use to like carve the path of the goddess, and she will kind of do this little spirit dance from one end to the other. Because at the other end of the stage is a gate from which the demons come pouring out of. So there's this day-night cycle. So during the day, you'll run around this corrupted village. You can purify corruption, and there will be villagers that have been corrupted. And then you free them. You free these guys. and then night, and there's also a like a carpenter you get eventually who you can have build like barriers and traps and stuff that will come up at night. So when night falls, demons start pouring out of these gates, and you can like give your villagers different classes, you know, archers or just warriors or sumo wrestlers or healers or, you know, all kinds of different stuff. And your job is to defend the goddess from these monsters during the nighttime.
Okay. While she's so that she walking does not, her path.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she just sits still at night. She doesn't walk at night.
Oh, not a night walker.
Yeah. Not a night walker.
All right.
So you defend her. That's kind of the action portion. You have your guy who you run around and do, like, you have plenty of combat options with him to do stuff. And then, you know, sun rises, you get her to the gate, you purify the gate. And then once that level is purified, then you can go back in there and you can give the villagers tasks to like rebuild stuff. And that will take like a day or two for them to do.
Okay.
So it has, you know, like a lot of, you know, cool games in the past, like, you know, your Act Razors and such. There's like a combat portion, and then there's like a little bit of like a semi break from that portion that will play into it. It's like, okay, well, I freed this area. Now I'm going to go and have these villagers, you know, rebuild stuff. I'm going to get currency so that I can upgrade my guys and new abilities and new medallions and stuff. And then that pours back into the action portion. There'll be boss battles in there where you'll have like a set number of dudes and you have to kill the boss while keeping her safe. And there's like a good, really good variety to the levels, and that just like, okay, there's this one's on a boat. This one, you actually don't, your character is just in spirit form, so you can't actually do combat. You just have to, you can only command the villagers and send them to different places. There's somewhere it's like, okay, you have to get X amount of this resource to, because there's a demon trying to like possess the goddess, and you have to give her the ability to just kind of purge herself. Some that are more like trap laden, some have like different paths through the level. Sometimes, surprise, this level is actually a boss level and we didn't tell you that. Just, you know, good variety of stuff, constantly giving you new things. It's a really just, you know, they made a damn video game. Like, here's some things to upgrade. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep giving you like a new little thing to play with, like every level or two. Just keep you on your toes. And yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. And about two-thirds of the way through, I got to a boss that was a pain in the ass, and I'm like, cool, this is great. I played it on Game Pass.
I've had my fun.
Yeah, I played it on Game Pass. So, like, it was just part of the subscription. Like, hey, I played 2/3 of the way through that game. I was having a great time. Got to this boss. Didn't really want to do it. And I'm like, I like this game. It's fine. I'm going to go do something else now.
So I'm trying to remember the last time that I played a similar tower defense-y game like this. I cannot pinpoint the last time I played a game like this, but I do tend to prefer the ones where you sort of set up your like passive kind of defenses, but then you still get to control.
You have something to do.
You have something to do, exactly.
Yeah. Yes. I was thinking about that too. Yeah, yeah. It's definitely not my genre per se.
Yeah. It's not my genre either, but I've played enough games that draw upon these elements to know, I think, what I like and what I don't. And a big part of it is that not only do I want to control, I want to have something to do, but I also want to feel like I have agency, because I've also played a lot of games where the balance between those things is heavily offset to the stuff that you're planning, to your passive defenses. Whereas I feel like I want to be able to make a difference as the player. And if all those other things that I've set up help me do that, I want to feel like I have the agency, like I'm doing stuff, and maybe this other stuff is helping me out. I have to depend on my archers and everything else. And maybe I'll get a couple of hits in while all that stuff is happening. I want to feel like I'm actually affecting change. And I think the other thing that I depend on that defines my enjoyment of games like this is pacing. Because I have a short attention span, I want to be exposed to the fun stuff at all times. And so, the sort of the more planning, more simmy aspects, I always want those to, well, be video gamey, honestly, and be fun and have a sense of, I don't know, audiovisual pizzazz. So, but I have heard a lot of people heaping praises on this game. And so what you're describing, Tim, all sounds very fun to me. I just, I hope that it's the right balance of ingredients that would, that would click with me.
It's a fun video game.
That's great.
And it looks good. It has some really good art. Yeah.
I mean, just hearing that from a new Capcom game that isn't a remake in 2024, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I feel like that's about a bit.
Yeah, they just dropped this random pretty cool video game. Like, you know, I mean, if I had paid money for it, I'd probably be like, okay, I got to get through this boss and see the rest of the game. But, you know, being on Game Pass, like, I feel like I can just be like, you know what? I got my fill. I see what's going on here. And it's cool. And I'm just going to move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Because... I need to get through Final Fantasy VII Rebirth before Metaphor ReFantasia comes out, or I'm never going to finish it.
But they just sell a bundle with Metaphor and then charge $0 for it so that I can buy it. Please. This is maybe what I would like.
I could find a site that cloud streams it, like my child finds his mobile phone.
I mean, honestly, because they're doing that Fire Stick with Game Pass. And I was just sort of like, should I do this? But at this point, like, you know, it's been so long. If I'm going to do this, I would rather have the higher, you know, actual 4K if I'm going to play modern stuff, you know? Because also, you know, I guess they just announced, like, the three more, you know, Xbox choices. And I'm just like, okay, what are all these things? I was just like, I'm going to sit down and actually look at what all of this is. And what I need is a giant spreadsheet.
Well, that's a tough thing. Yeah, with Game Pass is they messed it all up. So now you got to pay $20 to get the day one games.
Right.
Unless you're grandfathered in, which I guess I have to pay for Game Pass forever now if I want to keep being able to play the day one games at only $12 a month. Whatever. Game Pass gets used very much at this house. is a great thing for kids. Because I don't know what's going to hold his attention at all. Mm-hmm. But he can try out lots of different stuff to kind of figure out what he likes.
That's cool.
It is. It is. That's honestly the best. I think I play the least Game Pass in this house. Because like Lauren will find, you know, one of her games and just go all in on it for a while. And then Richard will try like a bunch of things just to see what they're like. And I won't have time because I'm playing other stuff.
right.
Yeah. But yeah, that's about it, I think.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah, that is I think that's about it
that's
for me.
That's a podcast.
Two.
Yeah. Still made it.
Look at us.
Still
yeah.
Made it to the dull hours.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's a shorty this time, I guess.
Yeah, it's a little bit shorter.
Yeah. It's fine.
That's A-okay. That's 2 hours is still... I think people will be fine.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. We didn't start till a little bit later tonight, but it's all good.
It's
but yeah,
good.
Thank you everybody for listening.
Yes, absolutely.
If
there were people in the Twitch, hello.
Yep. Hi-o. There was. Yeah, there's a couple of people watching.
Yay.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, you can subscribe. Follow. You can't subscribe to us because we're not like a affiliate or partner or whatever on Twitch. Yeah. I got to figure out how that works because I'm trying to build a Twitch channel.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, this is a natural transition. Do you want to pimp the
yeah, when is the next time that Super VGM Melee is going to...
I want to do... Okay, so one, you know, follow X-Strike Studios on Twitch.
Yep.
No hyphen, but yeah, that's where you can get the notifications that we're going to live to record these, and occasionally I'll remember to promote it on my Twitter, but sometimes it's like, oh shit, that's tonight. But yeah, you can also follow Super VGM Melee, which is Video Game Named That Tune, but done live on Twitch. I want to do another game later this month, like towards the end of this month.
Yes.
Perhaps something a little bit bigger, hopefully with a full cadre of contestants. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's when I want the next one to be, because I'm very busy in October. So yeah, I'm hoping the schedule will be do a game in September, late September, do a game in early December, and then do a game at MAGFest. But I don't know for sure if any of that's happening yet.
Yes.
So two of those things are in my control. But
I mean, it was fun to, you know, see the archive and to, you know, skip around. But it was super duper fun. Yeah. Hopefully I can make
a little bit, quite a bit of me fumbling around in the dark, but that's fine.
I skipped all of that. That's the beautiful.
I knew it was going to be a complicated thing. I do have a third screen now that's up here, which was very necessary just with the amount of stuff I have going on. Mm. That will be a big help unto itself. Yeah, so I'm hoping I can smooth do a real game with a bunch of random contestants. So you'll definitely want to follow Super VGM Melee on Twitter and on Twitch for updates on that. But it will probably be depending. I have to talk to my producer. See when she's free. No. Christy's going to be helping me with this. I cannot do it all by myself.
Oh, okay.
Probably the weekend.
Talking about Lauren.
No. The weekend of like the 20th through the 22nd or the 27th through 29th. Somewhere around there. Maybe the last one. But yeah. Probably the last one, just so I have more time to get ready. yeah, but I'll make a decision soon and hopefully that will go off. And then maybe early October we'll record the September episode of Triple Radio. We'll see what happens.
I have Beetlejuice opinions. That's all I know.
Thank you for watching, and good night.
Bye.
Night.
Bye.
Bye.